mute it, block it entirely, or turn it up full blast until an errant thought about poking someone in the eye would translate into a jolt of pain. There would be no eye damage, of course, unlike with a real finger, but it would still smart. Master Jimmy walked in a moment later, the shadows lingering on the missus' face scattering until pure joy took over. Mr. Tom's heart warmed to see it. A mother with her child was such a beautiful thing to witness.
"Here we go."
He grabbed up the eggs.
"How would we like our eggs cooked today, young master?"
A couple of hours later, Austin Steele stalked onto the property, his movements purposeful and his steps eating the distance to the door. Mr. Tom couldn't see him physically, but he knew how the Alpha walked into a scene.
"Master Jimmy, come out of there now,"
Mr. Tom called to the boy, who'd been wandering the secret hallways for over an hour now. Ivy House had opened the doors to him, and he'd charged in with the delight of a little boy.
"It's time to go, finally."
Master Jimmy hurried out, a lopsided grin on his face.
"That is wicked! This house is incredibly cool. How does it know where I am? It literally just led me to you with the lights."
"It's magical. Come now, is that what you're going to wear?"
The boy looked down at his jeans and t-shirt.
"Yes, should I put something else on?"
Mr. Tom held out the boy's jacket.
"You want this?"
"It's a really nice day, though."
"On the ground, yes. Up in the air, where you'll be, no. Come along."
Mr. Tom led the boy out of his room and down the hall.
"What's with my mom and that Alpha guy? She said they're just friends, but they definitely don't have a just friends vibe."
"Austin Steele is a solitary sort of man. He might have feelings for her, but he will not allow himself to act on them. He is very hard-hearted in that way. Trust me, he's been pursued by every woman in this town, young and old, resident and tourist. He very rarely goes on more than a couple of dates with any one person."
"Has he taken my mom on a date?"
"Not romantically, no. They have a strictly platonic friendship."
Mr. Tom led the way down to the ground level as the front door swung open, not mentioning that the miss would need to play for the field for a while. From what he'd always heard, female gargoyles typically treated men like hats for a long period of time. They picked them out, tried them on, put them back, changed them with outfits, borrowed them, what have you. Eventually, she would find that perfect hat, and that was when the mating dance would begin. Female gargoyles usually chose male gargoyles, from what Mr. Tom had understood. She chose the strongest alpha her kind could muster, someone to protect her better than she could protect herself, which was a tall order because of her power and magic. A shifter was just another hat, no matter how powerful Austin Steele was. Then again, the Ivy House heirs in the past had chosen mages. Powerful mages who could certainly protect them, but who weren't trustworthy. Those mages had eventually led to the heirs' demise, so clearly the heirs would have been better off sticking with their own species. The proof was in the pudding. Austin Steele stood in his sweats, his power surging around him, raw and potent, filling up the front entryway and then some. Usually he was better about keeping it contained, but now it pressed on Mr. Tom, a dominating force. Something had gotten his dander up. Probably the challenge in town that had made him late. The breath went out of Master Jimmy and he slowed, his eyes wide as he beheld Austin Steele.
"Yes, okay, you've made your point,"
Mr. Tom said as the miss left her room upstairs.
"You're not in your territory anymore, though, Mr. Steele. It is time to rein it in."
That ruthless blue gaze shocked into Mr. Tom, like a predator zeroing in on his prey. Mr. Tom's small hairs stood on end, and he had a sudden impulse to change shape and protect his territory. But the Alpha's focus shifted upward to where the miss was just reaching the landing. She stopped dead, her hand on the railing, her gaze rooted to Austin Steele's. The air heated up around them, catching Mr. Tom and Master Jimmy in the crossfire, magic swirling, pressure building. Within their gazes, within their connection, something urgent and needy pulsed and boiled. Her cheeks flamed, his body tensed. Arousal bled through the muted link.
Oh, good. Maybe the miss would finally try on a hat and reduce some of that sexual tension while she looked for her mate. It would help her calm down a little, which would help everyone.
Chapter 13. I opened my eyes to the familiar face of Mr. Tom, someone I didn't really feel like seeing at the moment. My heart hurt. Today was Sunday, the last day before Jimmy had to leave for who knew how long. At least we'd spent some really great quality time together, more so than any other time since he'd approached teenhood. We'd taken hikes and hung out around the town. We'd had picnics and wandered through the woods. He was not only getting used to the idea of magic, it clearly made me more interesting to a 19-year-old boy. Win-win. The only part of my plan that hadn't worked out was the trip to see the Basajown. It hadn't mattered much. Rather than hitch a ride to the mountain with one of the gargoyles, Jimmy had ridden Yev's nightmare alicorn like a pony. We'd wandered the mountain, touching trees and brushing leaves, hoping the Basajown would come out or that Austin might send him. No such luck. At dusk, we'd had no choice but to turn back. Jimmy and Yev had apparently bonded, though, because that night he'd chosen to forego video games in favor of sitting with her on her porch, throwing rocks at the mages who were flung away from Ivy House. Yes, mages still trickled in, none of them with enough magic.
"Not now, Mr. Tom," I said, rolling my head the other way, looking at the buttery sunshine layering the cream windowsill.
"Yes, miss, I brought you some coffee."
He didn't turn away. "Not now" means I'd like a little alone time before I get up.
"Yes, miss, and why wouldn't you, with that mage always staring or Austin Steele throwing his weight around, making everyone nervous?"
Sebastian is a godsend, and he only stares when he's trying to figure something out, like why I keep messing up spells so he can teach me to do it better, which he does. Austin isn't making anyone nervous. He's the same guy he's always been, just hotter somehow.
"He might not be making you nervous, but everyone else is on eggshells when he's around. He's gotten much more intense."
I shrugged. I hadn't noticed. "I'll be down in a minute," I said.
"Yes, miss. Pastries are ready and waiting, and we'll have a nice brunch in an hour or so. Mr. Jimmy is up and at 'em. In the shower and getting ready for his egg hunt. I've taken the liberty of..."
"Egg hunt?" I rubbed my eyes to try to rid them of sleep. Normally I'd sit up and reach for the coffee, but my stubbornness had kicked in. I wanted a moment to pity my situation before I put on a brave face, and I wanted to do it in silence.
"Yes, miss. It's Easter, remember? Egg hunts are a customary tradition for dicks on Easter."
I stared at him for a beat, reading nothing in his placid expression.
"When did you dye Easter eggs?" I finally asked.
"Oh, no, miss, don't be silly. I'm not in the habit of throwing away food, and there are only so many boiled eggs and egg salad sandwiches a person can eat. No, I used the plastic eggs and put money in them. Master Jimmy said that was his favorite type of Easter egg hunt growing up. I hid the golden egg very well, trust me. It'll take him all day. I haven't hidden the Easter basket. I don't quite understand why you'd hide one Easter item and not the other, but Dick and Jane customs can be head-scratchers. As for Easter brunch, I've had Edgar set up the garden tent on the lawn. As soon as we move out that way, I'll slip a mimosa into your hand, don't you worry. There is no reason to be sober for this year's Easter when you haven't been sober in years previous. Now, if you'll just rise and get ready, we can kick this day off to a smashing start."
My heart ached and my lower lip trembled. He'd said he had taken care of the Easter basket, which was the only tradition I'd kept up after Jimmy was grown, but he hadn't told me about everything else. I should have known Mr. Tom would find a way to make Jimmy's last day perfect. "Okay." I pushed up to sitting and reached for the coffee. "Give me a moment."
"Of course, miss."
I showered and freshened up, pushing away the sadness of Jimmy leaving and trying to focus on being thankful he'd gotten to stay for so long. In the kitchen, On the table by the window waited a lovely wicker basket with a pink bunny propped up inside. Chanel sunglasses sat beside a royal blue box of exotic truffles. A Louis Vuitton scarf took up the edge, with a black jewelry box resting on bright lime Easter basket filler.
Mom!
Jimmy stood at the island, the contents of his basket spread across the surface, his hands out and fingers splayed. The same lime filler lay discarded on the island in tufts, his much larger wicker basket pushed aside and his stuffed bunny leaning on its side.
What did you do? You can't afford all this.
Closed jewelry box in hand, I leaned around him to check out his wares. Beats earphones, an iPad, Prada sunglasses.
Are you serious with this?
He shook a box at me, forcing me to lean back. His smile took up his whole face and his eyes gleamed, reminding me of the Christmas he got a Game Boy and about peed himself with excitement.
Are you serious with this?
His hands kept moving, shaking the box, and I squinted to see the jiggling lettering.
Virtual reality gaming,
he said, and widened his eyes.
Virtual reality gaming! My buddy wants one of these so bad. He was just telling me the other day how awesome it was. How'd you know?
Mr. Tom pushed aside some of the basket filler so he could set down a silver tray filled with an assortment of pastries, breads, cheeses, and jams. His expression was smug. Mr. Tom was probably listening at your door when you were talking, I said with a chuckle, the jewelry box groaning as I flipped the lid. A diamond tennis bracelet surrounded two diamond studs, glittering in the sunlight streaming in behind me.
Oh, wow, Mr. Tom, these are beautiful.
Yes, miss, I have excellent taste.
I gave him a flat look, but showed Jimmy.
Oh, crap, Mom, did he buy all of this?
Jimmy touched each item in front of him before picking up the sunglasses.
Do I have to give it back?
The estate bought all of this,
Mr. Tom said.
And as soon as your mother finally gets around to officially transferring it into her name, she can take credit. Until then, your thanks will have to wait in limbo with her best of intentions.
The flat look continued.
That is awesome,
Jimmy put on the glasses.
I'm going to look so dope in these. They're designer. I've never had anything designer before. Girls love a guy who has a little bling.
Well, if that's the case, then...
No, no, Mr. Tom. I held up my hand. This is plenty. You'll have to wait until his birthday to continue spoiling him.
She really can kill the mood, can't she, Master Jimmy?
Mr. Tom tightened his lips while grabbing a bottle of champagne.
When you two are through, you may head to the back garden and begin the egg hunt.
Jimmy laughed with maniacal delight, snapping a picture of the headset with his phone.
Max is not going to believe this. He's going to be so jealous.
Share with him. I touched Jimmy on the shoulder. It's okay to celebrate good fortune, but it is not okay to hold it over other people. You need to share.
Yes, Mom,
he replied dutifully, ever the sullen teenager when he wanted to be. Mr. Tom hadn't been kidding. He slipped a mimosa into my hand the second we reached the lovely white tent arching over a rectangular table surrounded by fold-out chairs. White netting draped to the sides, secured to the tent poles with large cream bows, leaving it all open. Jasper and Ulrich, both dressed in white slacks and tweed jackets, outfits that had undoubtedly been picked out by Mr. Tom, milled around the grass in bare feet, sipping their own mimosas. I wondered if they'd gotten baskets. Given they were both from towns that were mostly magical, where people didn't seem to celebrate the same things, they probably thought this was yet another example of Dick and Jane oddity. They were still looking, though. Our traditions might seem strange to them, but that didn't mean they weren't fun.
Now, Master Jimmy.
Mr. Tom stood next to the tent, straight as a board, his black tux swapped out for a cream one.
The eggs are hidden in this section here.
He put his arms out to the sides.
Starting from the house and going to the edge of the wood, not beyond, I've hidden 100 eggs containing various denominations of...
He cleared his throat.
The Easter Bunny has hidden 100 eggs and he... It told me that the eggs contained various denominations of money and gems.
Gems? I asked, slipping out of my shoes as well. I hoped Niev hadn't put nails in the grass again. Mr. Tom half turned to me.
Do you not have gems in Easter eggs? They are worth money, so I assumed that counted. We have a ridiculous amount of them in the attic, too big or cumbersome to fit into proper jewelry. The heirs of the past accepted many gifts from hopeful suitors throughout the years, something you will likely miss out on since you seem to be settling so early. A shame.
Gems. Like rubies and diamonds? I clarified. I had no idea what he meant by the rest of it, and I didn't care to ask.
And semi-precious stones as well. Is that not how it's done?
Jimmy's face had gone slack as he stared at Mr. Tom. Be careful when you open those eggs, I told Jimmy. We'll swap out the gems for paper money. Mr. Tom is not really in touch with real life.
Well, whose fault is that?
Mr. Tom grumbled.
I'm not the one that's supposed to be making these monetary decisions. Honestly, miss, you can run into battle, but you can't take a blood oath. It's only a little blood, hardly a slice of the finger. You invented a game so you could get stabbed. What's the big deal?
Go! I waved Jimmy away. Go! Go find money. Mr. Tom certainly put way too much in the eggs.
Did he say...
Jimmy shook his head and turned. That had done it. There was too much to unpack in what Mr. Tom had said, and Jimmy's brain had shut down. It happened about once a day. It's not the blood I'm worried about, Mr. Tom, I said through clenched teeth, then drained my mimosa. It's the responsibility. I'm being asked to make a choice that will shape the rest of my life. I won't be able to get out of it until I die. I know I took the magic, but I guess... I pushed my hair over my shoulder, turning so the cool breeze could stroke my face. I guess I didn't realize the magnitude of it. I just need... I don't know. I need a little more time, I guess. It's thrown me for a loop.
Well...
Mr. Tom pulled the champagne bottle out of a silver ice bucket on the grass at the corner of the tent.
You can redo the house in your style of choice, and when you are ready, which will hopefully be soon, we can get everything squared away. A little permanence would do us all some good.
There was nothing little about this sort of permanence. Chapter 14. Austin checked his watch as he climbed out of the Jeep, careful not to touch anything that might transfer dirt onto his crisp white pants or sky blue polo shirt. He felt a little ridiculous in these preppy clothes, but Mr. Tom had assured him this was Dick and Jane Easter attire, similar to a garden party, and they'd all be celebrating in order to give Jimmy the best send-off they could. Austin could use a little distraction today. His brother hadn't just accepted his invitation. He was already on his way, expected to arrive tomorrow. Austin got the feeling that Kingsley was curious to see what Austin had made of himself, which made him more than a little anxious, given the state of his territory. Every dick-slinging hotshot across the world, it seemed like, women as well as men, wanted to pull off Austin's newly created mantle. Once subdued, they fell in line, but the constant challenges of lesser-powered shifters were starting to wear on him. It was tedious at best, and it sucked focus and time away from matters that desperately needed his attention, like organization and enterprise. He caught sight of Niev across the way, exiting her house in black pants and a black T-shirt, a small hat with a black veil pulled down in front of her face. She looked like she was headed to a funeral. When she reached him, she said,
Well, what's the crack?
Not a thing. I see you dressed for the occasion.
That bollocks is thick if he thinks I'll dress how he says.
I did it for Jess and Jimmy. This is apparently what people wear at Easter parties.
What is the big deal with the Easter bunny, do you suppose?
She headed for the side gate leading to the backyard where the house crew had fanned out.
What do you mean?
Well, it's a bunny that secretly lays eggs. Is it some sort of science experiment gone wrong, or have we gotten the laws of nature wrong and the proof is in the mutant bunny?
He laughed,
the decorative gravel along the side of the house crunching under his feet.
Jesse is going to be a puddle of sad when the boy leaves.
Nev slowed as they reached the grass.
She almost seems softer when he's around.
Jess stood in the center of the bright green grass, dressed in a cream summer dress flowing in the breeze, two little straps clinging to her shoulders and the bodice hugging her torso. Golden light glinted off her shoulder-length brown hair, and she had a hand perched over her eyes, shading her beautiful face from the sun. Her smile lit up the yard, outshining the bright pops of flagrant flowers hugging the grass.
"Her softness seems to make your personality a wee bit harder, no?"
Niamh said.
"I hadn't noticed her being softer, just happier. And no, it doesn't make my personality harder."
He gritted his teeth, trying not to complain about his job. Then, because they were technically in Jess's territory and he wasn't the alpha here, he just admitted it.
"Having to ask my brother for help with defense makes me want to scrap the whole alpha thing and go back to my old life where I had very little responsibility."
"You were wasted in your old life. Look, it's a load of shite right now with all these people creating hassle. But as soon as you get a few capable people in your top tier, it'll take the load off. I think you're just about to turn the corner, so I do."
He really hoped she was right, because he was about to face his successful, good-at-everything, stable older brother, and Austin didn't have much to show for himself. He wondered how long it would take before he got the disappointed look he remembered so vividly from his youth.
"Who died?"
Mr. Tom asked Nev as they neared the tent set up on the lawn, fluffy pastries and square-cut cheeses laid out on a tray.
"Couldn't be your good mood that has been dead since I've known you."
"Your sense of humor died, actually," she replied. "May it rest in peace."
"Hey!" Jess turned, her eyes sparkling with merriment. Austin stared for a moment, unable to help himself, lost in that glittering smile. "I didn't know Mr. Tom invited you. I see you put on your garden attire."
"Hey, Alpha."
Ulrich walked up with a fuchsia plastic egg in his hand, no shoes on his feet, and a sense of ease that Austin admired.
"Good of you to join. We've just about found all of the eggs, but there might be one or two more if you want to help. At first we weren't allowed to help, but Mr. Tom got a little too creative when he was hiding them, so Jimmy had to call in aid."
"Yeah, sure."
Austin shrugged, falling in beside Jess, his arm brushing against hers. "Only you could make that outfit look good," she said softly as they strolled across the grass, eyes down but neither of them really looking.
"What do you like best, the nearly see-through pants?"
She laughed, hooking her arm through his, sending shivers racing across his skin. "I think the shirt that screams, 'I'm a nice boy,' really does it for you." He let himself smile, something he could no longer do outside of this property.
"I'm just hoping to throw people off the scent."
"Make them think you're nice and then offer them a beatdown?"
"Works every time."
They stopped at the flowers near the woods, and she leaned around to look at him. Their gazes locked for a moment, and his world spun. "A deeper blue would really suit you," she said. He turned so they fully faced each other, their bodies close. "It would bring out your eyes." Unable to help himself, he reached up and traced his thumb across her full bottom lip. "When you became Alpha, was it forever?" she asked, so softly that he had to strain to hear.
"Being an Alpha is never forever. It is until someone tears you out of your position, sometimes taking your life to do so."
"So if you don't like being Alpha, you could just step down?"
He trailed his fingertips along her jaw before skimming them down her throat, running the pads of his fingers over her jugular. A shifter would only allow someone they trusted implicitly to touch so vulnerable a place. She didn't know that, of course, but his body responded like she did know, hard in some places and languid in others, savoring the touch, the heat of her skin.
"No, it's not that simple. I couldn't just let someone else challenge me and take it either. In becoming Alpha, I've drawn people to the area. Violent people who need a strong hand to lead them. I've bought businesses and am helping others flourish. If I were to pull out or allow someone unworthy to take my place, it would have negative effects on the community. It would hurt the territory and, most importantly, the people living here. I'm in it too far now to responsibly back away, which is starting to chafe at present. No one told me the growing pains of starting a new territory would be so arduous.
Uh-oh, you're bringing out the thesaurus. You must be getting diplomatic on me. Can you guys stop gazing into each other's eyes and help me?
Jimmy threaded through the flowers at the edge of the wood.
This is way harder than when I was a kid.
Oops, Master Timmy, no.
Edgar jogged at the edge of the grass.
It's still Jimmy, bro,
Jimmy said dryly, moving on.
Just like yesterday and the day before, do vampires have terrible memories?
It has nothing to do with the memory,
Niev said, hunting around the edge of the hedge labyrinth off to the right.
That one is just Fruit Loops. I really don't think he'd hide anything in the flowers, Master Jimmy.
Edgar leaned over the flurry of color. His flower design, like a flower fairy, had drunk too much, stumbled to the area, and thrown up all her seeds in one go.
Aha!
Jimmy reached down and plucked a pastel purple egg out of the flowers.
Got it!
Edgar's brow lowered.
I'll need to have a word with Mr. Tom about that next year. My flowers are not the correct place for fun and games. They are prize-winning flowers, and they should be treated as such.
Still grumbling, he wandered away. Jess gave Austin an apologetic smile and turned back to scanning the ground.
Are you having second thoughts about this place?
Austin asked quietly, keeping pace. He could smell Mr. Tom's scent, fresh in some places and stale in others, working around the garden in a set pattern. It wouldn't take long for him to find all the eggs, even if blindfolded. Just... She took a deep breath, stopping again and looking out at the woods. It took him a moment to feel it, a creature crossing the threshold at a fast clip, headed straight for the house. He must have realized we were looking for him, she said.
The Basajown.
Warning shocked through him, and he glanced around the large garden, noticing the positioning of everyone he would have to protect if things went wrong. The mage wasn't here, either not invited or not interested. He really only hung around when training, which was a pity. He was powerful and precise, his magic incredibly effective. He could have helped end any sort of altercation much more quickly. A prolonged battle might scare Jimmy for life. He may have enjoyed his introduction to the fun side of magic, but he wasn't ready for the horror show it could devolve into.
It's good. Jess laid her palm on Austin's forearm. Electricity zipped through his body, tightening his gut. Even if he turned violent, Ivy House would handle it. She'd love to, actually. She's much too violent, if you ask me.
I wondered.
He barely felt the anxiety coiling within him, wrapped up as he was in those shimmering hazel eyes.
If my brother doesn't use my invitation as his opportunity to beat me senseless for what I did to him when I left...
A crease formed between her brows, but she didn't say anything.
You need to meet him in a professional capacity, but I wondered if you would also have dinner with us. Just us, family and friends.
She blinked at him, as though realizing the importance of what he was asking.
Of course, she said. Should I bring clam dip in a cooler?
The laughter bubbled up unexpectedly. When Jess's mother had come to visit a couple of months ago, she'd brought her dip and eggs, repeatedly talking about belated Christmas. His smile dripped away.
My family isn't like yours. I'm from a long line of alphas, and we are trained young not to show too much emotion. We're not welcoming and warm, not with smiles and hugs at any rate. My brother might seem a little cold, but just know that it isn't personal.
Cold? Well, where did you go wrong? You were smiling and giving muscle shows the first night I met you.
Austin should have known it then. He should have known what she'd become from that very first night. She'd started seeping into the cracks in his defenses from the word go. What the hell was he going to do if his brother thought he was too unstable around her and advised him to cut ties in order to keep her safe?
His heart ached at the thought. He'd do it. For her, he'd do anything. But it would break the last shred of him that still hoped for a normal life. "You okay?" she asked. The Basajown drew closer. Having entered the property at a full-out run, he'd slowed to a crawl as he edged up to the tree line, closing in on Jimmy, who was bent over, hunting through the flowers. Austin turned in that direction, not far from the young man and easily able to rush in front of him if something were to happen.
"No, no," Jess whispered, laughter in her voice. She plucked at Austin's stupid shirt. "Wait."
"I really don't think."
"It's fine. I have a protective wall up. I'd singe every hair on that Basajown's body. The smell would be terrible. But can't you see? He's doing his sneaky thing." Her grin was evil. "Can't you see him slowly moving up through the trees?"
Austin could smell him and he could feel him with Ivy House's magic, but he couldn't see anything but trees. No movement, no big hairy body, nothing. He shook his head, continuing to look.
"Oh, right," she murmured. "With Sebastian's help, everything feels so second nature now. I just did that spell for finding dangerous things, and now I can see him clear as day. Watch."
She looped her arm around his again.
"Got another one."
Jimmy straightened up and wiped his head.
"This is tough. Good call on making the money eggs. Otherwise, I don't know that I'd keep going."
"Why not?"
Nev called, near the house now. A sparkly pink egg caught the light from the grass a few feet away from her. She'd clearly thrown it after finding it, since Mr. Tom hadn't made any eggs that easy to find.
"This is good, Craig. We should do this more often."
"If you followed Christianity, you'd go straight to hell,"
Mr. Tom said, readying another mimosa. Jess's was getting low.
"Shows what you know now, doesn't it? You don't go to hell until you die. I'd have a lovely long life being perfectly wicked, and then I'd head down under and pull on the devil's whiskers."
"Down under is Australia."
"Same difference, hot as the bejesus."
"Look," Jess whispered. The Basajown wiggled a branch, just one. Jimmy didn't even notice.
Jimmy sure didn't. If this were a dangerous situation, he wouldn't stand a chance.
"Are there more over here?"
Jimmy called. "Another branch," Jess said. "A bigger one."
"I heard it,"
Austin said. The branches were scratching each other, the leaves rattling.
"Just one more to find before you look for the golden egg, Master Jimmy,"
Mr. Tom called.
"It's hidden over there somewhere, or maybe a little closer to the woods."
Jimmy took a big step over a tightly packed bunch of flowers and then stopped abruptly, looking down between them. The Basajown pushed forward, put out his hands, opened his great mouth, showing his large teeth and longer canines, and softly growled. Jimmy's head snapped up, his body tensed. The large wicker basket in his hand dropped and plastic eggs tumbled out.
"Mom!"
Jimmy yelled, backpedaling over the flowers, crushing them under his feet.
"Help, Mom!
Oh no, my flowers!"
Edgar darted from the hedge maze. The Basajown straightened up, all 9 feet of him, and roared, filling the space with his mighty frame before he bent forward. Jimmy, face white and eyes wide, raced for his mother and ducked behind her. Nev cackled from beside the house.
"Now that's not funny,"
Mr. Tom called.
"The poor master will have nightmares. I feel guilty for the part I played, however almost innocently."
The Basajown's roar turned into hearty chuckles. He shook with them, bending over his knees and shaking his head.
"Did you see his face?"
The Basajown's laughter increased in pitch.
"Did you see his face?"
Jess turned to comfort her son as the Basajown finished laughing and straightened again, his gaze coming to rest on Austin, not Jess.
"Alpha, per our agreement, I must tell you that a band of shifters was in the process of crossing my mountain when I returned from my family reunion in the Redwoods. They were headed in this direction, though they were not hurrying. The most powerful of them traveled at the front until they crossed my scent. He then altered their course and repositioned his people so that he was always closest to my scent. I watched from high in a sycamore tree. He respected my claim and removed his people from my territory in the fastest way possible. He does not owe me blood.
What did he look like, the one in lead?
Austin asked.
A great tiger, strong and fierce.
The Basajown scratched his chest.
This one would give me trouble. Not the sort of trouble you would give me, but nearly.
Adrenaline fluttered Austin. He should have known his brother would show up a day early and sneak in through the back door. He'd want to test Austin's territory borders. He'd want to see what resistance stood in the way. Austin had some good people already, but he'd expanded the size of the territory quickly, and they were stretched thin. If Kingsley hoped to be impressed, he'd be left wanting. Still, it was worth trying to rally the forces and present a good defense to outsiders. Austin would need to show Kingsley his best if he expected help. Or maybe it would be better to display his weaknesses, to be humble. Help yourself to a few flowers, Jess said. Jimmy, now back with Mr. Tom, staring for all he was worth. It was a long journey.
Oh, you are so kind.
The Basajown offered her a toothy grin.
Very generous. A great hostess.
The Basajown picked up some of the smashed flowers Jimmy had crushed in his haste to get away.
Since I was the reason behind this catastrophe.
Yes, fine. That'll work, I guess.
Edgar said, wringing his hands as he watched.
Jess.
Austin squeezed her upper arm gently.
That'll be my brother. I have to go. I need to make sure everything is set up for him. I wanted to spend the day with you guys, but...
Of course you have to go, she said. I doubt your brother is that far behind the Basajown. Do you need anything?
Rain check?
She smiled, and her lashes fluttered, a pretty gesture that thawed something inside of him. Easter only comes once a year, but I'm sure there's some way you can make it up to me. He ran his thumb across her skin before pulling his hand away.
In the coming days, depending on how it's going, I might need you to show off your power and your people and your house. I might need a spectacle.
I say, if you want to make an impression, don't invite us all,
Niev said.
Some of these clowns would only make your brother pity your new setup.
Speak for yourself, old woman,
Mr. Tom sniffed.
Most of us are housebroken.
Says the agent who names his weapons.
Niev shook her head and went back to looking for eggs.
You didn't even think up good names either. Who names a bludgeon Ron, for feck's sake?
People have spirit animals and weapons have spirit people. How is that so hard to grasp? I simply evoked their human likenesses.
You and the vampire, you've both lost your marbles. This house has gotten to you. Why do you think I never moved in? I know why.
You throw rocks at tourists. You don't know why.
Austin pulled himself away from the fight. When they got going, it was hard to drown them out. He squeezed Jess's arm again.
We're in the same boat. We just have to do what we can with what we have.
She laughed, but nervousness bled through the link. It felt muted, which meant she'd learned to turn it down. That was probably good. Hopefully it didn't extend through bedtime. Good luck, she said as he turned. He stopped in front of Jimmy, the kid now in rapture staring at the Basajown like, well, like someone who'd just found out Bigfoot was real. His gaze slowly shifted to Austin.
Enjoy the rest of your day. The golden egg is at the center of the labyrinth, or near enough.
Austin Steele, that is cheating,
Mr. Tom chastised.
Maybe have the Basajown go with you to find it.
Austin continued.
He could nearly see over the hedge. I will be here tomorrow for a proper send-off.
Okay.
Jimmy leaned forward and lowered his voice.
Just so you know, my mom's dream has always been to find a man that cooks her dinner. She likes romance, too, like roses and candlelight and stuff. I mean, all girls do, right? But I've always heard her say that she loves the idea of a man in the kitchen.
His face colored.
I don't know, she's just always wanted someone to cook for her, I guess, and she never got it with my dad. My dad always said it wasn't his job. I don't think she liked that much, but, you know. He shrugged, if he wanted an in with her.
Well,
Mr. Tom puffed up.
It's good to know I'm appreciated.
No,
Jimmy placidly pointed at Mr. Tom.
I mean you are, but I meant...
I know what you meant.
Austin winked at the kid.
I'll take care of it.
Jimmy smiled, and it was the look of a boy who thought something good was going to happen to the most important person in his life. Austin hoped he could make good on his promise. Chapter 15. It was the day after Jimmy left, and I decided I wasn't going to mope around the house anymore, teary-eyed from the image of his car pulling away. It was time for action. I would head into town and challenge Sasquatch, owning my gargoyle mantle and blending invisibly into the buildings. I'd lie in wait for Sasquatch to sneak by, and when he was nearly past, I'd stab him right in the back. It was the sneaky, underhanded sort of thing that my mood dictated right now. Stabbing him from the front might scare him a little more, but I felt like pulling a psycho from behind. I patted Cheryl, nestled in the back pocket of my jeans, the spring-loaded pocket knife with a razor-sharp edge. She'd cause a problem if anyone would. After that, it would be off to the bar for 102 libations, followed by an alcohol-induced coma. Drown the pain. Hopefully, my plan would bolster me enough that I could meet Austin's brother tomorrow. I'd play ambassador to Ivy House, then we could sit down and talk about the mage's visit. We'd need to set up dinners and... I didn't even know what. Clearly, I'd need a lesson on what to expect from a formal meetup. But all that could wait until tomorrow. We had a month to plan. One day of furlough wouldn't hurt. It's going to work this time. I made a fist as I headed out the door, Ulrich and Mr. Tom in tow. Jasper was already downtown, having organized the game with Sasquatch. I'm going to become the stone.
You don't actually become stone, miss,
Mr. Tom said. Yes, Mr. Tom, I know that. It was just a figure of speech. Sebastian met me on the porch, and I had a surge of hopefulness. His week had officially ended yesterday. Did this mean he would stay?
What happened to your hedge maze?
He asked as he kept pace, having decided to tag along even though it wasn't a traditional training session.
I ducked back there to give Edgar a new growing serum and saw him fretting over a huge hole in the side.
The Bassajown did that, I said. Mr. Tom hid the golden egg, which was a solid gold egg, by the way.
How was I supposed to know the situation didn't call for an actual golden egg?
Mr. Tom said, outraged.
You told me about your traditions, but you left out vital information.
You should have seen the look on Jimmy's face,
Ulrich said, laughing. At first he was incredibly confused, then he thought it was fake gold. It wasn't until he found out it was real that the facial gymnastics started. I think he was afraid to hold it. Of course he was afraid to hold it, I said. Nev wasn't on her porch. It was only mid-afternoon, but maybe she'd already headed to the bar. Jimmy's departure had affected everyone. They'd liked having a younger person in the house to fawn over, like a bunch of grandparents. He's never seen that much gold in his life, not to mention the amount of money it represented. We were comfortable, the ex and I, but we were not rich by any means. Jimmy hasn't ever seen the kind of money this place has just loitering around the attic.
If you would just finish the transition and officially transfer the...
I held up my hand. Not now, Mr. Tom. I don't want to hear about that today. If Austin and his brother had set up more robust defenses already, nothing had notably changed along my street. The houses ended and gave way to woods on both sides, sunlight fighting through the dense canopy, struggling to the ground. Sebastian, to answer your question, the Bassajown made that hole. He went into the maze with Jimmy to help find the egg. Once inside, though, they couldn't find their way back out. Before Edgar could go in and retrieve them, the Bassajown roared like he was being attacked, picked Jimmy up, and burst his way through the sides until he was out. Once there, he cleared a large patch of flowers and then drank all the champagne. Apparently, he didn't like being trapped in the maze. Sebastian threaded his hands into his pockets.
A Basajown, huh? I'd like to meet one of them someday. I've heard they are fearsome.
Yes, and incredibly violent when they get their dander up. I peered through the trunks and leaves as we walked. I need to put a spell around the woods at the end of the street to warn me of approaching danger. But hikers and animals and all sorts of people wander around this area before setting foot on Ivy House property. How do I pinpoint what's actually dangerous?
Remember that spell you learned for sussing out weapons and dangerous things?
Sebastian asked lightly, looking the other way, as though envisioning the possibilities. Yes?
And a tripwire. I'm sure you know how to do a tripwire.
Yes?
So?
Sebastian looked straight ahead again. So I tie those two spells together and voila! I shook my head, annoyed at myself. I should have been able to deduce that.
I have a couple of spells that might work better, though,
he said as we reached the end of the street and turned toward downtown.
They are advanced, but with practice you should be able to get them. Then we need to get into elixirs and potions. Believe it or not, potions are much harder than spells. They are an art form. If you get good at potions, the world is your oyster. You can make a living wherever you go. A good living, too. You won't have a care in the world. Well,
he shrugged his left shoulder.
Except for being killed by a rival organization trying to cripple the organization you're working for.
That's a thing? I asked.
Of course it's a thing. To have power in the magical world is to accept danger. The people who want it will kill to get it, and the people who have it will kill to keep it. Everyone else is in the crosshairs. But if you are a master at spells and potions, you can protect yourself. Master both, and you are someone to be reckoned with.
Are you someone to be reckoned with?
Yes, when I want to be, which isn't often. It's tedious. I much prefer working in my lab with my head down, creating new spells and potions.
I bit my lip. It really did sound like he planned to stay. I took a chance. You'll need a lab, then, and a paycheck. I ran my fingers through my hair as we neared the downtown area. I'm sorry, I've been distracted with my visitor. I lost track of time.
So far, you've paid me in other ways. We'll figure it out. But yes, a lab would be nice.
I almost asked what other ways he was referring to and if that meant he was for sure staying, but I wasn't in a great frame of mind right now. So instead, I just nodded and let the silence settle over the group. I'd add a serious sit-down with Sebastian to the growing list of things I needed to accomplish tomorrow. A few streets over from the main drag, a hard-faced shifter I didn't recognize walked down the sidewalk toward us. Tall and broad, he had a gently lined face that showed his years, mid-40s, and eyes the color of onyx.
He glided like the lethal killer he likely was, his gaze passing through our crew quickly, but efficiently, showing expertise.
Shoulders back and limbs loose, his confidence was no small thing. I gulped. This had to be one of the shifters Austin's brother had brought in. He wasn't here to cause trouble or challenge for a place in the pack. He was here to keep order and establish a presence. Given the sudden coiling of my body, half of me wanting to laugh maniacally and then sprint away, and the other half wanting to laugh maniacally, brandish Cheryl, and sprint toward him, he was damned good at his job. Time check, I said, the shifter's eyes coming to rest on me. I made myself keep walking, swinging my lead feet, tamping down that maniacal laughter. My small hair stood on end as though a battle drew near.
You have 5 minutes, miss,
Mr. Tom said.
You might as well start now. That horrible little man is probably already in place. He has been a cheat for as long as I've known him.
I expected the shifter to continue walking down the center of the sidewalk, a bit of posturing that would force us to either step aside or fight. I expected to play chicken with his barrel chest and thick, muscular body, using magic to ensure he lost. I would not be pushed around in my town. Not by someone I knew, and especially not by an outsider. I knew enough about the magical world to know you couldn't always be polite, and you shouldn't always take the higher ground. Sometimes you had to fight for your place. Surprisingly, though, he slowed and stepped to the side, taking the curb so we didn't have to move.
Ma'am,
he said, nodding.
Good day, sir, I replied, then couldn't help making a face like I'd just sucked on a lemon.
Good day, sir, I muttered after we'd passed and were beyond his hearing. Hopefully, you never knew with shifters.
I held his gaze, won my place, and my celebratory salutation was, good day, sir? What am I, Charles Dickens?
Technically, that is a who, Ulrich said. That must be one of the new guys. He was the right amount of intense for the town at present.
I thought you did very well,
Mr. Tom said, and although he was behind me and thus out of sight, I knew his chin was raised in snobby disdain.
You showed the shifter that the mistress of Ivy House does not cower within a dominating stare.
Sure, but now he's probably wondering why I didn't stop and extend a lacy gloved hand so he could kiss it before I walked on with my parasol, I muttered. I told Austin I'd show off my power and my people. Hard to look awesome when I say things like that.
People are wary of the unpredictable, Sebastian said, hands still in his pockets, turning to look behind us. You're good. Keep being weird.
You say that as though you think she has a choice in the matter,
Mr. Tom said, and I got the feeling he was trying to help in some way. Okay, everyone disperse. I waved them away, pushing back against the wall. An older man and woman walked along the sidewalk on the other side of the street. They glanced over, and I gave a little wave before pulling my power around me and sinking into the elements. They waved back. And if I just rendered myself invisible, they would have given a sign.
Dang it!
I watched Mr. Tom don a bowler hat and a pair of thick-rimmed glasses before wrapping a yellow and maroon-striped scarf around his neck. He rolled up the sleeves a little on his tux jacket and then hoisted one of the pant legs to his shin. That done, he drifted back to the wall.
Become the stone.
Mr. Tom's voice was soft and hollow, as though lending credence to his efforts.
Soak into your surroundings. Wrap the magic around you like a cloak.
Huh, Sebastian said as Mr. Tom disappeared. I could still see him, of course, with my magic, but when they were in this element, there was a sheen to their appearance. It helped me identify when they were hiding and not.
That's pretty slick. I can't make him out at all.
But you can make me out? I asked as Ulrich crossed the street and then blended in on the opposite side. I felt Jasper on the main drag, probably halfway between Sasquatch and me. He always made my opponents start at the other end of the downtown area, so I had a chance to figure things out. Hadn't happened yet, but today was the day.
Yes. Why does Mr. Tom put on all that garb?
I have no idea.
And why did he roll up his coat sleeves and one pant leg?
Look, when it comes to Mr. Tom or Edgar or Nev, you really just need to roll with it. They don't make any sense at the best of times. Sebastian's crooked smile was back.
You might have the most eccentric organization of them all.
That's a very nice way to put it. Okay, you gotta scram. I can't have you hanging around chatting to me. You'll get me caught. Sebastian took a step away, but he paused and pulled a small vial from his back pocket.
I don't have magic to blend into stone, but when you get good at potions, you can use magic to make you disappear. I won't get you caught. Give me a sec.
He pulled out the cork stopper, tilted the vial up, and dribbled the contents into his mouth before he swished twice, sucked air in through his lips, and then swallowed it down, all without letting any liquid dribble from his lips. He saw me watching.
Sometimes it's not just the potion, it's how you take it. Aerating that one right before swallowing keeps it working for twice as long. Don't tell anyone, but I found out accidentally. It's a secret.
His body shimmered, and then the image of his face went hazy. A moment later, his physical being bled away, out of sight. He'd become invisible through other means. Does that mask your scent, too? I asked, remembering when spells like that had been used against me.
Scent, yes,
came his disembodied voice.
Not sound, though. For some reason, I can't get this potion to cut out sound.
Maybe you don't have enough power?
I can do a soundproof potion, and the two can be taken together, but the soundproof potion doesn't respond to aeration, and strangely stops the other from responding as well. I have no idea why. It makes no sense. So when I use the soundproof potion, the invisible potion doesn't last as long.
I don't figure I need it here, though, so it doesn't matter. I'll be quiet.
I shook out my hands, noting Mr. Tom had drifted down the way a little, giving me space.
Here.
The bit of sidewalk where Sebastian had stood looked completely empty.
What?
The sound of glass met concrete. A shoe sole scuffed against the path, and a little vial appeared at my feet.
So you can see me and also get used to needing a defense against invisibility potions. They are heavily used within the magical world.
His foot slid further away, giving me space.
You have to be careful with this potion, the one I took. It isn't just your body that disappears. It's almost like a cloud extends around you. Not far around you, but you will make things within the cloud disappear. A cunning eye will spot that, and an experienced magical worker will look for it. That vial at your feet holds a counterspell to the potion I took. If I drank it, it would nullify the effects of the spell I have consumed. If you take it, it will allow you to see through the effects of the potion I'm using. There are a few different varieties of invisibility potions, and the counterspell will reveal them all in different ways. That's a secret, too. Most counterspells are just that, counterspells. But I added a twist to this one. It's more helpful that way. Plus, it tastes better.
You guys must all want to sneak into each other's labs and steal each other's stuff, huh? I picked up the vial and pulled out the cork.
In most cases, yes, which is why our labs are so well warded. Break-ins usually only happen to newer mages, and they don't have much to offer. Anyway, don't let me keep you. I didn't intend a lesson on invisibility potions. I just figured, since the case presented itself...
I hope this isn't poison. I upended the vial. The taste of black licorice exploded in my mouth, and I forced myself to choke it down. My face screwed up, and I shook my head.
If that tastes better, I don't want to know what it tasted like before.
Don't like black licorice? Huh.
He took the empty vial from my hand, his fingers brushing against mine. I flinched as half my hand disappeared.
Also, no, it is not poison. I don't even want to contemplate what it would be like for that alpha to come after me. I will never hurt you, as long as I live. I swear that. Both because I have decided to take you as my student, and also because I'm terrified of what that alpha would do to me. The more I learn, the more I realize how even-tempered he is around you. I do not want to make him angry.
No, probably not. He gets crazy. The street shimmered a little before settling back to normal. The shape of Sebastian manifested near my elbow. A little hazy, orangey, and sparkly, but there.
Cool.
I gave a thumbs up and tried once more to blend into the stone, remembering what Mr. Tom had said, feeling the stone, turning into the stone. Shivers coated my body. Was it finally working? Either way, I needed to get closer to the main drag. I crossed the street at a jog, then flattened against the wall of an old house turned orthodontist's office. Shivers still danced across my skin. I chanced to glance at Sebastian standing about 10 feet away, looking right at me.
Dang it, you can see me?
Is it cheating if I tell you?
I narrowed my eyes at him. He looked away.
That's a yes, then. It is cheating. Your expressions come in handy.
Dang it,
I said again, aiming for the alleyway down the way. Ulrich drifted back, scanning the street, on bodyguard detail. Mr. Tom slunk across the street after us, following at a distance.
Oh, I see,
Sebastian said at my back.
He is disguising himself for when he can't blend into buildings. Though, who is he trying to look like? And the rolled-up sleeves and pant legs still make absolutely no sense.
Can't people still hear you? I asked.
Sorry,
he whispered.
Though I'm still unclear on what we're doing, other than failing to blend into the stone.
Just shh.
I moved slowly, digging down deep inside of me, bypassing the sorceress magic to access the gargoyle part of me. The part with the wings, tough skin, and ability to fly. I called it up, glowing with the feeling. The desire to change form and take to the skies overcame me, to rise above the buildings and hunt. That was probably a good sign.
Can you see me?
I whispered.
Shh,
Sebastian replied. I rolled my eyes, halfway down the alley now, focusing on the street. Someone passed by, straight and tall, muscular, definitely not Sasquatch. Further along, I caught sight of the vacant wine tasting room. The empty barrels had all been cleared away, the area swept. Once I signed the paperwork, I'd own half of a winery. Austin and I would need to settle on a winemaker, update the tasting room, and get the word out. It would be a lot of work. Why didn't that scare me as much as officially transferring Ivy House into my name? Because you could sell the winery, but Ivy House comes with a blood oath and a contract term of forever unless killed.
Oops, where did your mind go?
Sebastian whispered.
You'd nearly done it. You'd blended in for the most part. If I hadn't been watching, I probably wouldn't have noticed you.
Sorry, I said, pushing the thought of my duty away. But it refused to release its grip. The time had come for me to become the leader my people needed, the leader they deserved. I had to do what Austin had done and claim my position fully, balls to the wall. Only it was easier said than done. I reached the edge of the alley, fighting to keep my focus and losing. Jasper waited just down the way. Mr. Tom was behind, and Ulrich was in the air? I looked back, catching a glimpse of him just as he jumped from one rooftop to the next, his wings snapping out so he could soar the last few feet before his feet touched down. He held his clothes in his hand, and the second he landed, he disappeared into the wall next to him, his bright pink form blending in effortlessly. Why hadn't he just followed behind Mr. Tom? I turned back to the street, my gargoyle magic pulsing as if I'd unburied it earlier and made it easier to access. Actually, it felt like when I was in the middle of changing, the power surging. Ready to grab it up and drape it over me like a cloak, hoping for more than just nearly working this time, I froze. Sasquatch stood right in front of me, an evil smile curling his lips. Triumph lit his eyes.
Dang it!
I yelled. Chapter 16.
Mrs. High and Mighty can't use the magic she was given,
Sasquatch said, his mustache moving as he spoke, the motion wiggling a clump of food stuck on the end.
You couldn't be grosser if you tried.
I spread out my arms. Go ahead.
Let's hear it.
I lifted my eyebrows, my mood blackening, which was saying something because it was already in the dumps.
Hear what?
That I won.
You get to stab me. Isn't that proof that you won, you dangling dingleberry?
I spread my arms wider, aggressive now.
You won, so go ahead. Claim your victory.
His smile widened.
Get back into the alleyway more. The Alpha said we can't do this where people can see.
He pulled a pocket knife from his back pocket, a different one than before, and extracted the blade before motioning me on.
I'll follow.
If you stab me in the back, so help me God, I will tear it out and fill you full of holes. I am not in the mood.
I can stab you wherever I want. That's the deal.
I didn't make that deal.
Your man did. Quit stalling.
I huffed, the sound turning into almost a growl before I trudged to the back steps of the vacant tasting room and faced him again, out of patience. Sebastian, his interest clearly piqued, stopped a couple of feet away, still undetected by Sasquatch.
There!
I spread my arms once again. Go for it. Also, your knife is stupid. Have a little pride in your weaponry. His bushy eyebrows dipped and his gaze slipped down to the plain brown handle peeking through his chubby fingers, the dull blade about 5 inches long. If it had a name, it would be Pat. And if I started naming all my weapons like Mr. Tom did, I didn't know what I would do with myself. He braced, and I readied for the flash of pain, for the terror of a knife speeding toward my flesh. But the only movement I saw came from the corner of my eye. A massive shape rushed in, too fast for my reflexes, and I jumped in surprise as a large hand shot out and gripped my nemesis' front. A powerful body followed, brushing past me, and Sasquatch was ripped away from me and slammed into the fence to our side. Sebastian dove to the ground, magic curling around him, whatever spell he'd tried to fire off floating away in a cloud of smoke. His eyes were wide, and for a moment his face seemed to wobble, as though it weren't attached, his skin still sparkling tangerine. My potion was clearly running dry. The shifter from earlier, His dark eyes flaring with violence, had Sasquatch pinned. Sasquatch stood frozen, arms at his sides, as though he didn't trust himself to even take a breath. His knife stayed clenched in his fist, although it was obvious he didn't intend to use it in self-defense. His eyes were so big that they looked like they'd pop out.
That kind of behavior no longer exists in this town.
The shifter's voice was a low growl that fluttered my stomach, dangerous and dark, capable of incredible violence. Unlocking my limbs and forcing myself into action, I stepped closer and lightly put a hand on his arm. He didn't flinch, but the air of his static aggression changed, now encompassing me. He turned his head slowly, his warning very clear. He punctuated the message by dropping his gaze to my hand. Whoops, not a touchy-feely kind of guy, huh? I pulled my hand back. Still holding Sasquatch, who looked stiff as a board, the shifter beat that aggressive stare into me, silently commanding me to back down. Right, yeah, I read you loud and clear, I said. But here's the thing. This kind of behavior has never really existed in this town except for this particular training exercise. Austin knows about it. He's asked that we carry out the punishment portion out of sight, so that's why we're here. His stony expression didn't change. His hand didn't give Sasquatch any slack. He won the game, I pointed at Sasquatch. And now he gets to stab me. Those are the rules.
You have a mage in the area.
It sounded like each word was dragged over gravel, something that should have been unpleasant, but wasn't. Yes, he's crouching on the ground, just... I moved to point, but Sebastian waved his hands at me in alarm, shaking his head. Well, I'm sure you smell him. Oh, wait, you can't smell him.
I heard him. I know where he is.
How do you know it's a mage?
Invisible and clumsy, and I felt the brief sting of useless magic.
I frowned at him. The sting of magic? What's that like?
Gargoyles, too.
Yes, I pointed. There's one right on the roof looking down at you. The shifter didn't so much as flinch. If he wanted to look up, there was absolutely no sign.
And another at my back,
he said.
That's a very dangerous place to be.
Oh, no, I assure you I mean no harm.
Mr. Tom's magic wavered and then slipped away as he moved toward me.
I am merely standing by in case the mist needs something.
The shifter's eyes flicked over, and he did a double take. He'd only meant to sneak a glance, I knew, but Mr. Tom's getup created something of a disconnect between the brain and the eyes. The shifter craned his neck for a better look. That's Mr. Tom, my butler, I said, knowing that wouldn't really ease the blow.
What kind of dog and pony show is this?
The shifter ground out. I grimaced. There really aren't words. Listen, thanks for trying to help, but I'm magical. I'll heal the stab wound right up. No biggie. The shifter leaned back, releasing Sasquatch, who still didn't move. The stranger's dark eyes held mine before roaming over my face. I felt Jasper move into the alleyway. The shifter made no sign that he knew, though I suspected he did.
What sort of game ends with a beautiful woman getting stabbed?
He asked. Heat bled into my face. I call it a game, but it's actually training. It's like hide and seek. If I can't properly hide, I get stabbed by the worst human being this town has to offer. If I do, I'll get to stab him, something I dream about.
He can smell you. How could you possibly hide?
A crease formed between his brows.
What are you? I haven't smelled magic like yours.
She is...
A nutcase, I said, cutting Mr. Tom off. If this guy didn't know who and what I was, there was a reason. Austin wanted to keep it a secret. Listen, if you don't mind, I'd like to get this game over with so I can meet my friends at the bar. We're out of the public eye, as Austin requested, so we should be good. The shifter studied me for a long moment. Shall I walk 5 paces, turn, and blaze you with my pea shooter, mister? I asked, once again ruining my hard stare with my big mouth. He held out his hand to Sasquatch. Without needing to be told, Sasquatch filled it with the knife.
All due respect,
the shifter said.
I wasn't told about this activity. I'll need to clear it with the Alpha.